Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is brought to you by Gunn Street Wiring, a micro-instrument electronics company obsessed with overall quality. That's right, they're a new approach to the guitar wiring market. Because, of course, when it comes to music, there is endless variety. But when it comes to your instruments wiring, your manufacturer generally gives you one type. However, Gunn Street Wiring put forth a shiny alternative by creating a massive range of different wiring harnesses suitable for every single musical style. They have a beautiful website where you can navigate around selecting your instrument shape, then choosing between 50s modern and hybrid wiring harnesses, and within that, every single different type of harness you can possibly imagine. It's an affordable mod, and if you go with Gunn Street Wiring, it's a mod you simply won't regret. Check them out, gunstreetwiringshop.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi.
And Matt Knight.
Hello.
Yes, and this week there's been a slew of small but exciting releases across all sorts of varied equipment things. But first, let's check in with the Guitar Nerds boys and find out what everyone's been up to. Matthew Knight.
Yes.
I presume you've been buying pedals.
Bloody eBay. Bloody being really good at eBaying.
You are you are exceptionally good at eBay.
I've sort of like completed, you know, I'm sort of like level 99 eBay.
It is your skill.
It is my skill. I ended up purchasing a Memory Man, which, you know,
people say you already bought one.
I just thought I'd like to just build up a collection of Memory Men.
Why are you buying what sort of Memory Man?
This one is a mid-70s Memory Man, solid-state Echo Chorus. So not the Deluxe Memory Man, which has the 5 controls. This one only has the 3 controls. Effectively works on the same idea. It's pretty much the same circuit. But you just have a mix control, feedback, and delay. Mono out, not stereo out. Then 2 inputs, a boost input, which gives you slightly more volume, and a normal input. And then an echo and chorus switch. Effectively, all the chorus switch is doing is slightly changing some of the parameters on the 3 controls on the top to basically give you a chorus. But it does this wicked thing, whereas if you turn the delay time up to full and the feedback up to full, so it's feeding back, and then switch it to the chorus, everything speeds up very, very, very quickly. So it goes it's almost like this time stretching, or the reverse of time shrinking effect. Yeah. And it's wicked. It's like a hardwired plugged version as well. Oh, so obviously the reissue ones
That isn't cool. Why?
What? Hardwiring is
Jay,
cool.
What on earth are you talking about? What are you talking about? Hardwiring, hardwired pedals are a nightmare.
Yeah, but this is 1976, Jay.
What are you talking about, Joe? Oh, that's great. No, that's awful. Yeah,
well, I meant it's preferable to the mini jack input.
Fair enough.
You have to try and find an adapter for that you definitely threw away when you bought the Voodoo Labs.
Those were that was the standard power input on a Big Muff, even only like 2.5 years ago. You know,
yeah.
It's
I mean,
crazy.
I have a small stone that can't be a decade old, and yeah, it's still. It does. Wait, doesn't the Proco Rat still come with that input?
Yeah.
In fact, if you buy,
I think that's only just changed. Actually,
oh,
I think
it?
The Proco Rat has actually now comes with a 9-volt.
And if you buy the Tube Screamer, not the TS09, the 808.
Yeah, it comes
that
with the
comes
set.
With comes and it comes
with
an
adapter.
Yeah,
it's sort of like, why don't you just change the
plug? No, it's vintage correct. That's like saying why don't you put robot tuners on a Stratocaster?
why don't you put robot tuners on the Stratocaster? What was worse though, and I'm sure we've mentioned it before, was like the valve powered pedals, because I had this weird like two pronged with a flat plate power supply.
Wait, what do you mean the valve powered pedals?
Like the hot tubes, the tube zipper,
the black finger,
the wiggler.
I mean, Vox literally did that, what, like 3 years ago?
No, they did. It wasn't quite like that.
Quirky.
What they did was the with those Vox pedals, there was it wasn't that. It was called something like that, but the signal just went through a valve. Right. I think it wasn't that was how it was powered. I mean, I'm talking like I know what I'm talking about, which obviously I'm not, because I never know what I'm talking about.
No, the valve, because the Electro-Harmonix valve ones had a certain transformer in them, they needed a really specific power supply.
So I really liked the hot wax. I really liked the black finger. Do you remember they released the white finger, which was a non-valve version of the black finger? But for me, the black finger was the best sounding compressor
I had ever heard. It's like a proper valved studio compressor. So
but you could make it like super squashy. Like, it was my favorite thing to plug in when I worked in the bass department at GAC, if I wanted to sound exactly like Billy Sheehan and like just really massively over compress everything.
Right, did you say that, work? That... I mean,
oh.
but yeah, I'm just really into old Electro-Harmonix pedals at the moment.
You are at the moment. It's definitely your thing.
But that Memory Man, honestly, this Memory Man was cheaper than the deluxe one I bought. And I was talking to Adrian Thorpe at Thorpey, who serviced my other one. He was like, the chips alone are worth more money than you paid for the pedal. So I was like,
oh, wow. How about that?
Wicked. It's because
don't say that on this. Do you know how many people listen to this podcast?
Yeah, they're both going
to
go out and buy one.
Yeah. And I think this thing is just, you know, you've got to look out for the pedals that finish at stupid times. I think this finished at like 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. No one's on eBay at 11 o'clock Sunday morning, apart from me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. So... yeah, and I AB'd it side by side with the Deluxe Memory Man. Maybe that'd be a cool thing for the old
Instagram.
Well, that's
a great idea. We should do that.
They both sound wicked, but they both sound very, very different.
The problem is, of course, they're such a massive size. Can you really actually fit them on any of your pedal boards, Matt?
Yeah, I've actually built a pedal board specifically around this one. honestly, this one or the Deluxe Memory Man, but
I can't imagine you settling for a single delay on. Do you know what?
I was contemplating putting it on my big pedal board, and then I sort of AB'd it with the JHS Pink Panther. And I tell you what, the Pink Panther gets really, really close.
Really?
Yeah, because it's got the tape mode on it, and it's got that, like, the Deluxe Memory Man has obviously got the modulation side in it. And it's really... how do I put this? Electro-harmonix-y. You know, this like over the top. So if you dial in just a little bit, you're like, wow, I feel a bit seasick, the amount of like chorus they've put on that. And you can dial that in on the Pink Panther. The only thing that the Pink Panther doesn't do, but it obviously it's modeling like a DD5 at this point, is it doesn't do any sort of oscillation.
Yeah.
Which
that was always
the
problem for
me. Well, yeah, some people want that. But, I mean,
so many other pedals will do what the Pink Panther does and will do the whole oscillation thing. That's
But then again, they make the... so I did, like, a whole kind of, like, shootout at home. So I had this, JHS Panther Cub as well, DM2, yeah, both of the Memory Man pedals, you know, just a bunch of different delays.
Have you got an AD9?
An AD9. No, you've got an AD9, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got an AD9. It is almost my favourite.
Actually, they all sound really good in their own way, and I'm like, man, just wish I could put them all on my pedal board. But
and the carbon copy.
And the carbon copy. Yeah.
And the Carbon Copy Bright. And now the I Love Dust Carbon Copy.
Oh, and is also, that the one that you... Is that the limited edition...
Yeah.
Finished one that we saw at Summer NAMM?
They did, yeah. They've done a Phase 90 and a Carbon Copy in the coolest finishes you will ever see. Is, you know, surprisingly enough, they're not, like, flying out the door. I guess it's because everyone has a Phase 90 and a Carbon Copy already.
Yeah. I might be wrong about this. I'm sure. I remember the guy mentioning that they were a design company from Brighton. I might have made that up, but it was a UK-based design company.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool if it is. I mean, I really like the artwork on it. Hey, do you know what? We didn't actually add this into the news, which we'll go into later, so I will speak about it now. But do you know what this is, we're currently in? We're in the 10th anniversary of the MXR Carbon Copy.
No.
Really?
Yep. They've just announced today, they've just announced a 10-year anniversary Carbon Copy, which they are doing in no finish.
What, just so like it's just a plain chrome finish?
Yeah, it's just the chrome box with the black. And I was like, oh, that's not as good as a normal one looks. I'll just stick with this one. It doesn't say 10-year on it or anything. It's just like... It just looks like a knockoff Carbon
actually,
Copy.
On,
still cool that it's been 10 years.
Yeah, actually, on that kind of, well, I say this is slightly different, but on the Weird and Wonderful, I sent it to you guys in our sort of WhatsApp group. But they're Eventide are selling a one-off prototype of a pedal they never made, signed by a bunch of artists, which I thought was absolutely nuts. They were like, "Look, we made this. It got signed by a bunch of people. We never actually made it into a pedal." But here it is. And
what
it's
is
like
it?
Just the one prototype. It's like a modulated delay.
That's
and
cool.
It was going for like $400. I was like,
we should have bought that.
I know, we should have bought that. It probably went for more money and it probably finished for more money. But
okay,
I was like, that's wicked.
Hmm.
But yeah, I've just found actually on their website it says out of stock and free. You're right, it doesn't even say 10th anniversary. And it's in chrome. That's a shame. Yeah. I would have liked to seen something a little bit more funky.
They released a new Isobrick as well. I don't quite know what that's for, but they've added an extra input. It's got 5 inputs now.
Oh, that's the sort of thing that I'm interested in. I love accessories.
Yeah.
Accessory manager Jay Cross.
I'm trying to find where that is, because that's very exciting. And it doesn't appear to be on their website. Still just the M238.
Yeah,
oh, hello
certainly,
there.
Certainly is. Accessory manager. So, Jay Cross, you've also been getting involved in effects pedals a bit this week.
I tell you what, so I don't really know why it's happened, but...
It's because you love a deal.
It's because I love... No. That's not what I'm saying. Overnight, all these, like, these new TC Electronic pedals have, like, halved in value.
When you say new, you mean the slightly larger chassis, more affordable
ones. Yeah.
The ones that we were all raving about were really good for £50 or whatever. What were they,
$70? They were £50. I think they were £49. And most of them now are £29. £29!
What's that in USD? So they must be...
where are we?
$40? $45?
No, I don't even think it's that much. I think it's like 30, 35, 36, something like that.
That is mad.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I don't really understand what's going on. But yeah, a bunch of shops are selling them super cheap at the moment. So I'm super excited about this. I am going to have a look at all those pedals that I nearly bought when they were £49, but actually didn't.
Yeah.
So like the Third Dimension, which as far as I can tell is a completely unique pedal, which nothing else sounds like. I'm really excited to try that because it's a really interesting design. 4 buttons on there. Never seen anything like it. So I'm really excited to see what that sounds like. The other one that I really want to go on is there's two really, the Chorus, the Afterglow, sounded amazing. And the Analog Delay, the Echo Brain is the other one.
That was actually really cool.
Yeah.
I did quite like the delays. The reverbs I wasn't too fussed about.
Oh, really?
the phaser. So I got a few of them when they came out. But I said on the group, oh, I bought all of these. I didn't at first realize we were talking about the cheaper ones because they also reduced the normal lines. So when that happened, I got a flashback and a mimic and a quintessence.
Yeah.
I got those three when they got reduced, but I do have four of the those cheaper ones.
Yeah.
So I got the Blood Moon Phaser, which is pretty good. Like it's okay, but whenever I'm listening to Phaser, I judge everything by the Phase 90.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean it really. It's just kind of the staple, isn't it?
Exactly, and if I can't make it as slow as the Phase 90, because that's the best thing about the Phase 90 is how slow it goes.
Right.
If I can't make it as slow as that, then it's kind of not as good. So it was okay, the Blood Moon. I got the Tailspin Vibrato, which is kind of them trying to do the Boss VB2 style thing, and that was pretty good, to be honest. That was quite convincing. And I got the Nether Octava, which is them trying to do the Boss OC2,
which is the one that looks like Stranger Things, right?
The logo does, but obviously the colouring and control layout is very OC, Boss OC too.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it does that thing that cheap octaves do.
Just tracks really badly.
Okay. So it's sort of cool on guitar, but not on bass. I mean, in fairness, not a lot of stuff tracks on bass, especially when you're down-tuned like me. But still, like, probably the best octave you can get for £25.
Well, yeah, I know, right? And, yeah, there's also the Gauss Tape Echo, don't think I ever watched.
Gauss. I thought it was called Gauss.
I don't know. Gauss.
I'm pretty sure it's Gauss.
I think it's Gauss.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever heard a video of that one. So, man, I can't believe how cheap they are. I cannot believe how cheap they are. I don't know if maybe they're being, like, this seems like the sort of thing that would happen if they were being discontinued or something. I don't know. But they look very, very cool. So I think if you're after trying a new effect that you haven't tried before, I mean, that's kind of what we always said about Behringer pedals. Not that I'm suggesting that these are rehouse Behringer pedals, of course. But what we always used to say about like Behringer pedals, because they were cheap, that's the comparison that I'm making here. Was that if you wanted to try a new effect that you hadn't had a chance to try before and you weren't sure whether it was going to fit with your system, then going for one of these was a really good option. And that's certainly the case now with these. £30, you're having an absolute bubble. I mean...
Well, absolutely. And for what it's worth, in Behringer's defence, the cornerstone of my band's sound was traditionally a Behringer UV300 Ultra Vibrato.
Yeah.
I know that because I have a stack of three of them in the corner of my room because we used to have to keep buying them because they always broke because they were in plastic housings. But at the time, like go back like 7-8 years, no one was making vibratos.
No.
Vibratos weren't a thing. And now there's the VB2, TC do the shaker, the viscous vibe. There's the Tailspin by TC as well. Like, the vibratos are everywhere and sort of very easily accessible.
Yeah. Please don't get me wrong. You made it sound like I was talking smack on Behringer, which I absolutely was not at all.
They absolutely have a place.
Yeah. Those old pedals that they used to do were a bit breaky because they were plastic chassis. But, you know, these I always thought were great. That Chocker Trem as well. Great pedal. Chocker. Absolutely Chocker, mate. I love it. There's some great stuff in here, so I'm really excited about this. I think I might be buying some.
That is a fantastic idea. Do you any idea which ones in particular?
The ones that I literally said at the start of this little segment.
Oh, sorry.
The Third Dimension, the Echo Brain, and the Afterglow.
Cool.
I can say it a third time if you want.
No, that's
okay,
fine.
Right,
fine.
Jay, but which ones, really?
Oh, which ones? Okay, well, I'm thinking about the Third Dimension because I tell you what, Matt, you should check this out. I feel like it'd be something you'd be into.
Yeah, like, that sort of it does sound like
the sort of sound
into.
You might like. I don't think
I love Dimension.
Do you? Yeah.
I love the first Dimension, the second Dimension. Even the third one.
Interesting,
was a good
interesting thing for you there, though, Matt. This actually, this effect isn't really Dimension. Dimension involves like two choruses sort of shifting slightly out of sync of each other. This is actually just called a third dimension chorus. So just want to get your facts straight
just
on that.
So
that's
know,
all.
Yeah.
But yeah. So
yeah.
So I've also been doing a little bit of shopping this week, which retrospectively was a terrible idea because I'm moving house. And I need all my money for that. But nonetheless, when you see a Baja Telecaster for £350 on eBay,
wait, what?
Who's not going to purchase it?
Did you just buy a Baja Tele without telling anyone?
I'm telling you now. I told you that I had some news.
What colour?
The Black Guards Teddy. Oh, £350.
£350
for a Baja Telecaster. That is an absolute steal. What a fantastic guitar. I really like it.
That's really exciting.
I completely forgot until it turned up what we'd always spoken about.
That I had bought it.
No, that it has a four-way selector.
Yeah, mate, what are you talking
about?
Like,
have you listened to?
That's literally all you've ever gone on about.
Yes, I know. I'll
tell you another thing about the Baja Teddy, yeah? Really big neck. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'll tell you another thing. It's a telly.
Oh, yeah, telly. Yeah. Custom shop pickups on that, I think. Can you believe it?
What does the four-way do?
So you've got... Honestly, I can't believe you need me to explain this to you.
Let me podcast that for you.
I'm only using the bridge anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But... It's the standard three-way switch. So bridge, middle, then neck. The fourth position allows you...
Wait, what's the fourth position? Is that the one where the neck should be?
Yeah, closer to the neck. Right. Yeah. Closest.
So the neck position is not the neck.
No, that's just wrong, actually. It's not wrong. I've had four in mine.
Is it
not right?
No, it's not wrong. I'm 100% correct. So
do you reckon it's in from
when
one?
No. Right. When you're closest to the bridge, that's the bridge. Pick up, yeah?
That's good. That's bridge. All I needed to know.
When you move into the middle position... That's the middle.
Which is no longer middle.
Well,
right,
the second position is middle. Then you've got neck. And then you've got the neck and the bridge running in series rather than in parallel.
And that makes it sound stratty?
No.
What does it make it sound like?
It makes it sound more like a humbucker.
Basically, it runs the bridge, the neck into the bridge, as opposed to running the two together, which is what you get when you're. It sounds more like a stacked humbucker than a humbucker,
right?
Because essentially, the middle position of a Telecaster is a humbucker because you're running both pickups together, kind of. And then the fourth position runs them series, so it goes through the neck pickup and then through the bridge pickup, so you just get that kind of big boosted signal. That sounds amazing. The fourth position on a telly sounds great. That's like a really common mod that a lot of people do. Yeah. That's, I would say, after just like reversing the plate on a Telecaster, that's probably the most common mod I hear of people using the four-way selector switch. And it's quality. It's absolutely quality. And if I remember correctly, has it got a push pull on the it's got a button on the volume, right? Or on the tone.
I don't know.
Put it out of phase when it's
There's no knobs on it.
What do you mean there's no knobs on it?
There are no knobs on it. I don't know, they're not on it.
What you bought it without knobs?
I don't know. It came without knobs.
What? So it's just like bare screws. Well, not bare screws, but it's just the pot sticking out.
Yeah, and the second pot looks quite normal, but
right.
I'll have a look.
Yeah. Well, the wiring would be on the inside, and I assume it's probably. I mean, who knows? It depends on what they've done on under the hood, but if you need a push switch knob, which I assume is what it is.
What does the push do?
Have you not been listening to us? It puts the pickups out of phase.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Like that Peter Green sound.
That sounds cool. Well, anyway, I only had one telly, so
I cannot believe we're having to explain to you, Baja Telecaster. I mean,
But I like Stratocasters. I don't normally buy Telecasters.
Joe, this is the guitar that we've talked more about than any other guitar since we've been doing this podcast.
You've talked
no,
about more
we
than any
collectively,
other
100%. This is.
Oh, I agree. It's very good. I would still buy a Strat over a Tele.
Okay.
Just the neck, a Strat with just the neck pickup.
Just the bridge pickup.
Oh my gosh.
It's the only pickup you use.
This conversation has completely blown my mind.
I'm sorry. So in other news, also, you know how I was getting really into all the Helix stuff? I took it to a practice and it didn't sound as good as my Boss MS3, so I immediately switched back. Which is really annoying because I've got to rebuild a board.
Well, I feel like that's difficult though, because if what you're saying there is it immediately didn't sound better.
No, yeah,
the whole issue with the Helix, what we've been talking about, is it isn't something that you can really just plug and play. You've got to turn.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. But for me, the issue was I was faced with exactly the same situation the first time I used an MS3.
Yeah.
Because, of course, using all the internal effects, I'm faced with the same situation in that you can't really dial in any of your tones until you're in a practice situation when you can hear everyone. And using the MS3 real time, I was able to set up the compression I wanted, a drive that I liked, and a couple of other things here and there. Applying exactly the same scenario to the Helix, I was not able to make it sound good. Now, I'm not saying that it can't be made to sound great. I think the Helix definitely felt to me like I was the wrong type of player using it, as in I think it's for bedroom guitarists and metal bands sort of thing. Like, as in it's great on its own in a room, and I think it's great when you want all those high gain sounds and those very clean sort of safe delays and things like that. But I found when I was trying to use it to find like a really rugged bass drive, I couldn't get anything out of it, and the compression seemed to always scoop a lot of the mids out. And I found, because of course every effect that you load in comes preset,
yeah,
and then you manipulate it from there, every preset is incredibly like I don't think I loaded in a type of drive or compressor or EQ that didn't naturally have all the mids scooped out, because that's Line 6 players.
Yeah, and I guess. But also,
the Boss stuff, everything was very flat and very easy to manipulate. But I'm not criticizing it. I'm saying that maybe the way I play is slightly more geared towards Boss stuff than Line 6 stuff.
Maybe. I think also you've got to bear in mind that these companies will probably want... Line 6 have probably designed the patches with... someone who is going into a guitar shop and has never used one of these things and doesn't know really what they can do in mind. And by that, what I mean is they have loaded up a drive and they, you know, say they've called it like metal drive or whatever. They are going to want it to sound pretty extreme straight off the bat so that this person knows exactly what they've got there, and then they can wind it back.
Yeah.
Same with like delays and same with reverbs. I think it's very unlikely that you're gonna go to the first delay setting and for it to be like a subtle slapback. It's gonna be a really big, expansive, like ethereal delay, because they want to show what it can do. And then the fact that you can wind everything back is you know, well within your means. That, you knowing that you can do that and you knowing what the Helix can do, will definitely set you aside from most people who are trying it for the first time.
True.
And I think you've just got to bear that in mind when talking about it in that sense, because had they gone the other way and had they gone, okay, right, well, here's our first reverb setting, let's just make it like a really sort of subtle spring reverb, you know, maybe not to put too much on there. If people want to put more on there, they can put more on there. The first time someone who doesn't really know what they're doing plugged into it, they'll be like, well, there's no reverb here. This doesn't sound like my Fender amp. This is rubbish. So, you know, I think you've got to be careful about how you talk about the presets, because I don't think that's really a fair way to.
No, you are absolutely right. And were I to go into a band situation, I'm not satisfied with building patches on headphones. You know, so, or building them at home through a little amp. And actually, all my amps at home are guitar amps rather than bass amps, so I build anything through them. So I have to build in that moment, and with time not on my side, the Boss stuff was easier to get a usable tone. And don't get me wrong, I was not expecting to make this argument. I was expecting to be very much... Because I've loved that since I've really got involved in the Helix stuff, and especially with the sort of the preamps and the versatility, the fact that on the last update, they introduced Acoustic 360 preamps and Billy Sheehan's, I can't remember the name of it, his preamps that he uses. The fact that I can, at the touch of a foot switch, go from sounding like John Paul Jones to sounding like Billy Sheehan is fantastic. And that those are sort of authentic reproductions of those amplifiers is amazing. I really wanted that stuff to work because I've always found the Boss stuff to be quite safe. But actually, I think my tastes when sitting at home making weird noises are very different from my tastes being a functional player in a band.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And you actually said another thing, which maybe we should cover in a different episodes. I was having a chat about Kemper and about, you know, things like FRFR cab, and actually a friend of mine who does a bunch of stuff into plugins through studio monitors. I just can't get the same feeling. Like, I can hear the great guitar sound, but it just doesn't feel right coming through monitors. I don't know what it is.
I'm not convinced that in 10 years we're going to be laughing about this stuff in the same way that we look back on when rack everyone gear. Moved to rack gear in the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we're caught up in the hype a little.
I'm not sure we are. I think that this change has been coming steadily for the last few years. I think that we all think about modeling. You know, people sort of our generation think of modeling as Line 6 spiders,
that's what
when someone says, "Oh yeah, I've got a modeling app," that it doesn't
flex tone.
It's exactly what I think of straight away. Is the insane setting on a Line 6 Spider 2. Whereas, you know, when we were working in the shop, people started getting onto that Axe FX thing, and then after Axe FX came the Kempers, and all of a sudden they became a little bit more appropriate and a little bit more acceptable. And then Helix comes along, and it's not just in an amp. It's something controllable. It's something on the floor. It's something you can do without having to have loads of software plugged in, and without having to have a master's degree in understanding Kemper. And all of a sudden, this actually is like, oh no, this is a good piece of gear. So no, I don't think we will be laughing about it. I think this is a very different conversation to what it was 15 years ago when people were buying Line 6s.
The thing you're is right, you've got Jay. To take something like a Katana that does a much more basic version of modeling but is a Class AB paramp, so it feels more like, you know, a real amp, you know, as people will say. And I think this is the thing, things are starting to sound much more like a real amp. I think for me it's just like actually having guitar speakers behind you and hearing things through guitar speakers rather than hearing things through monitors. And someone said to me, like, a Kemper is basically, when you hear a Kemper, you're hearing effectively what is a really great recorded guitar sound.
Yeah.
Which I like, but I'm like, I still like an amp. And another YouTuber put up a really interesting video. It was about how do we think, like, nostalgia, like, affects our choices in gear. Because
of course it does, and then
I guess the further to that is then how does that put a block on what we're willing to try or what we're willing to move to. And actually, you know, when I've had modeling stuff in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, it sounds great, and then I'm like, oh, I really miss X amp, and I'm like, but that
swings that door swings both ways. I think people are, for the same reason I was attracted to the Helix in the first place, was I can't really afford to buy or find or trust gigging an actual old 70s acoustic 360, but with Line 6 I just got one free with the last update, so isn't that great? Wouldn't it be great if I put my faith in this to be exactly like that, you know, massively sought after, very rare, awesome sounding vintage amplifier. Wouldn't it?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It'd be great if I could just have that as at the touch of a button. And you want to believe that that's the case. And so I'm not saying that it isn't. It actually sounded completely fantastic on headphones. I just found it tricky to make everything sound good in a room when time is not on my side.
Yeah.
And that's half the thing with any pedal. I want less controls, and I want all the sounds to be good. I don't want to have to be controlling 20 things to try and get one usable sound.
Yeah,
that's
but
why
that's
the Phase 90 is such a good phaser.
Well, totally, but that also is the difference between why you gig with an MS3 and not with a Helix in general, because you want fewer effects, and you just want to know what you're doing with them. You know, I have no doubt that if you spent a couple of hours programming a Helix, you would find the sounds that you want, and all of a sudden they would be easily accessible. But is that what you need?
Of course.
No, not really, because you don't need to go from Smooth Criminal to Mr. Brightside, which a lot of people who are buying these products do need them to go to. You know, that you
yeah,
need
of course,
you need
that's
them.
A very good point.
And so having the ability to just dial stuff in quickly is what we've always been into. And I think that product's absolutely got a place in the market. And I don't think that it's going to go away anytime soon. And I think that's good.
No.
And I think it's down to the fact that we've got it right this time. And I say we, I mean, you know, the guitar industry.
No, yeah. You specifically, Jay.
Yeah, me yeah. specifically. I got it correct. Well done, me.
Well done. Well, anyway, on that note, we should dive headfirst into a big old barrel of news.
News.
Hang on, have
up.
We not even got to the news yet? What? How?
Yeah, no,
how long
we've
has
been
the podcast been going on?
Well, I don't know. Let me check. It's 35 around
5 minutes.
35
right, okay.
minutes. Yeah,
I got. I don't know if anyone realised, but I got kicked out for about 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden my computer started working again. So I did
notice that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know where the time has gone. There we go.
No, yeah, that's totally fine. We didn't miss you at all.
Okay, good.
Anyway, the first up on the news, I'll kick things off this week, boys, with a. Oh shit!
Don't. What are you doing?
Oh, sorry, sorry. The beer overflowed. Anyway, I was supposed to be like opening a can to symbolise the fact that yes, Marshall have released more beers. Now, we did review Marshall's beers last time they released a load of beers, and they were rather good. I believe they... I can't remember what they did. They did like one
there
that was like near 10%.
No, it was 8%. That was a blonde, which I reckon maybe is just this same one again, rebranded.
Right. Yes, they have rebranded more appropriately, because I think I don't think they'd really named them, had they? I think they had like it was called like a dirty something, or
yeah,
I can't remember what they were called, but they certainly they've rebranded their beers in collaboration with William Brothers Brewing Company. Yeah, they've done three. They've done the Amped Up Lager, the Full Stack IPA, and Jimmy's Treble, which is a triple blonde. So, yeah, probably the same as last time, because their triple blonde is 8.6%. The
Jim's
Full
Treble,
Stack IPA,
not Jimmy.
Jim's Treble.
Jim
oh, yes,
Marshall, not Jimi
Jim's,
Hendrix.
Yeah, oh, right, yeah. Oh, whoops. And the full Stack IPA is 6.8%, and the Amped Up Lager is a tasteful 4.6%, but now they're doing them in sort of... slightly better branded bottles and cans because they come with the mesh of a Marshall amplifier. So it does look rather stonking. There you go, Marshall. If it isn't sort of phones and glasses, it's beers. So more Marshall beers. I wonder how long this sort of this relationship between Guitar Gear and craft beers is going to go on for, and if it's going to, you know, if it's going to become more. I'm waiting for the day when you buy a pedal with like a matching limited edition sort of stubby of IPA.
But hang on a sec. What are you talking about? There weren't. This is the first collaboration between a pedal an amp company and a brewery that I can remember.
Well, yeah, but you know, craft beer and effects pedals. Well, there's definitely been others.
Have there?
Well, I guess there's a rock and roll tie-in with Beaver Town. Does anyone want to hazard a guess?
Oh yeah, it's Robert Plant's son, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Plant's
son. Beaver Town, which are now, unsurprisingly, one of the biggest craft breweries beer makers. And actually,
yeah,
there was a note I actually had.
They got bought by someone.
They did, actually. I just literally just Googled it. And,
is it Heineken?
They got bought by Heineken, which is mental.
I know my beer stuff, mate.
Aren't Heineken like the biggest brewery in the world? Didn't you just say the biggest brewery?
One of the biggest breweries.
Yeah, I don't know. I've tried a number of the Williams beers, Williams Brothers beers in the past. One of which was one of my favourite beers I've ever had, actually, and that was the Kelpie, which is a seaweed flavoured beer, or maybe not seaweed flavour, but like it was brewed with seaweed, and it was really nice. I don't know if it's something that is still current. But yeah, I've had that a few times and I really liked it. A couple of their others, Birds and Bees, I think I had. I'm just having a look at their the list of stuff. But yeah, they're Scottish, if I remember correctly. So that's interesting. Because if I remember correctly, the last brewery that they hooked up with when they were making the that last lot of beers were a French brewery, I think, who also made the Iron Maiden beer. I could be stretching here.
Oh yeah, there was the Iron Maiden beer. I guess that's not quite a guitar tie-in, but
we did. There was a craft beer once Robinson's. That was like based on the heavy metal. I definitely remember seeing the HM2 on.
Oh really?
On a label once, yeah.
You guys need to go into beers, Matt.
I just leave it to the pros.
What, Marshall?
Professional.
Yeah. Anyway, in other more exciting news, probably the biggest piece of news this week, I certainly am very excited about it. Electro Harmonix, the granddaddies of effects nonsense, have released a sequel or enhancement, larger version of something that I like very much. Matthew Knight.
Yes. As they put it, the Grand Slam. This is the Electro-Harmonix Grand Canyon, which I must say, first of all, is a fantastic name.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I think Jay said it as well. It's brilliant.
It's unbelievable. What a great name.
Do you think they always planned it?
No.
I don't know.
To do the canyon and then do the Grand Canyon.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I don't know.
But I reckon they came up with the name before the pedal.
So, I think...
Well, when did the canyon come out?
Last year, year before, I think. I think it came third in Gear of the Year or second.
I still
maybe.
Love that pedal. I need to get that pedal back off of Mary Spender, actually. I like that pedal.
Yeah, so basically, for people who don't know, obviously their Canyon was their multi-delay, multi-function delay pedal. It was about the similar size as their normal XO range, so like the Nano Pog and the Nano Chorus. It had 11 different delay modes and a looper on it. Stereo in and out, I think, if I remember rightly. And had a bunch of cool things like shimmer delay, which we talked about on Gear of the Year.
And what else? The most important delay it had on there?
The Memory Man?
No, it had an octo delay on there.
That's what I
so
just
your
said.
Tails
like
ascended
shimmer.
In pitch. Did you?
Yeah.
You said shimmer. No, no, no. This one went... So if you went... Ba-da-da-da, it went... Ba-da-da-da, 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 ba-da-da-da.
I think that... Wasn't that under the shimmer, though? Wasn't that... Or
no,
am
it
I
wasn't. That was
of...
separate. It was called Octo.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny because Line 6 called their shimmer Octo.
Probably just stole it from a boss idea, like way back when, anyway.
Oh,
no.
There he is. He's bitter.
We
He's
did it
bitter.
First.
Really? When did your shimmer come out? The RV6, which was.
We were doing pitch shifting reverbs in like the 80s.
Before it was cool to shim.
Yeah, before it was cool. Then we discontinued it because, for whatever reason, and then people went, oh, this is cool. And now everyone, you know, wants a bit of the shimmer. Anyway, so the Grand Canyon is their deluxe version of the Canyon delay. So you've basically got a, I guess it's in the same size as the X series. I think that's what they call it. Like the slightly bigger ones, basically a double version of the small one. It's got all of the same, or most of the same modes as the other one. Echo, mod, multi, reverse, deluxe memory man, tape, reverb, pitch, shimmer, sample and hold, drum, which is like the old Benson Ecorec, doubler and looper.
I think the drum one's new.
I think the drum one might be new. But what I was going to say was, obviously, had they thought about this before? Well, I think a lot of the controls on the top are probably internal digital controls that they've managed to realize in extra buttons, so they were always there. So you've now got an expression pedal mode, momentary mode, tails mode, and ping pong, which are all done on buttons. And then you've got three extra controls on the top alongside delay level, feedback, and delay time. You've got a delay type control, and then two modulation controls that vary depending on what effect you're on, a bit like a Line 6 DL4. So if you go to, for example, the tape mode, you've got a distortion control and a flutter depth. Or if you go to sample and hold, you've got sensitivity and decay and swirl, or shimmer has filter and modulation. But what I really like is the easy access to the looper. So you hold down the tap button, it puts you in the loop mode, and you can use the delays in conjunction with the looper, which I really like, which is something the DL4 did very, very well. And I think if you watch the demo, I think it does a lot of things really, really well. If you really like the Canyon, but you are missing tap tempo or maybe expression pedal,
I think then this is basically.
I don't know. Sure. Did the Canyon
maybe,
have
maybe
the expression?
Maybe it didn't. I don't know. I'm not sure.
But this kind of covers, and it covers a lot more of the looper stuff, which a lot of people want, especially for some of the. For more the ambient thing. I think the only thing it's missing is maybe MIDI, but it has got a foot switch control on there. So you can have an expression pedal. It does say 13 presets, but I'm not sure how you do that with a foot switch. I'd need to do a little bit more digging into that. But overall, if you love the Canyon, I think this is an awesome step up from that.
I mean, you were saying where does it fit? I think this is basically the delay version of the Cathedral.
I guess it's the same size. By the pictures, it looks a bit smaller than that, but I'd imagine it's probably about the same size.
I would have thought so. I mean, I haven't seen one IRL, but it seems to be that sort of size and processing power. I assume probably a bit more powerful than that. But that's really cool because I remember thinking about that at the time. You know, the Canyon is kind of the next generation of the memory series, you know, the memory toy, man, boy, etc. And having a larger version just makes sense. So
actually, it reminds me of when, and this is a pedal we haven't talked about in ages, and I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, this pedal is wicked, and I might try and track one down. Electro-Harmonix Memory Man with Hazarai.
Yeah, great pedal.
Which was a wicked pedal. It had a bunch of different modes on
it. Oh, yeah!
And I get this is kind of like a future evolution of that, really, because it had a looper in it, it had a bunch of different delay times, and then you had the Hazarai, which gave you a bunch of different extra effects, stereo
what
in, stereo out.
What is the Hazarai?
Hazarai was, and I was thinking about this before we came to the podcast, and I was like, I'm going to mention this if we get a chance, because I was like, I remember this pedal being wicked. And most people thought it was a Japanese word, but it's actually a Jewish word, which means with extras.
Oh, right, okay.
So it's effectively Stereo Memory Man with extras. Is effectively what it means.
Oh, cool.
But that is a wicked pedal. And then I was like, that would be a killer collection. Every Memory Man. Imagine that.
I think after
this is too expensive. That is no, one. No, no, no.
Come on, you can do it.
Yeah.
Oh, come on! After the Dan Electro food series, you can definitely do this, Matt.
All the Memory Men.
It's your next thing. Nerds will bankroll it. You can do it. It'll be
oh
fine.
Well, that's fine then. I'm off. But yeah, I think this is a. I think this is one not to be overlooked. I think this is a serious contender for a really awesome, simple to use delay pedal that's not a whole bunch of money. I think it's $249. I don't know if that's Matt price. They're saying street price. So I'm guessing.
Yeah,
I think
it was whatever, £195. I think. Yeah,
but I think very cool. Price. Very
yeah,
cool.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised.
Awesome.
I'm guessing there's no manual yet, so I don't know if there's a dedicated foot switch or they're doing something with programming presets there's no stereo in, which some people might miss if
that
they're running
seems,
at the end you've got stereo
that
out.
That seems a bit weird that there's no... I feel like they've maybe missed a trick there, not having stereo out on it.
Because I was thinking that a lot of people might want to put that at the end of their boards and they might... Because there's a lot of people running stereo pedals now. So not to have stereo in seems strange.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing they've ditched it for the foot switch. And I've got a feeling there's probably an external foot switch coming. Because I was looking at the old, talking of Electro-Harmonix, the old big box 16-second delay, the Hog. They've all come with separate foot switches that allow you to do a bunch of different stuff with the looper and also do some stuff with presets. So I wonder whether there's... A dedicated foot switch coming, perhaps.
Just looking at this, the cathedral is stereo. So it's weird that this isn't. I have to say, that is a bit...
I guess you would maybe put the cathedral after it.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I'm like, if this is your only pedal, but then it's got reverb mode on it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, part of me thinks no excuses, but at the same time, I think you could probably overlook it and go, okay, well... It is what it is.
I wonder if, because I don't think I ever really spent a huge amount of time with it. I might not have even actually ever played one. I've watched a couple of demos, but the Ocean's 11 reverb, that came out last year. Is that right?
No, I think it came
Did
out
it?
Earlier
okay.
this year.
Earlier yeah. this year.
Yeah.
I wonder if, because that...
Which was very much their utility knife version of a
yeah,
reverb.
That's, it's,
whereas
it's kind of like it's kind of like their version think, of the Hall of Fame.
Do you think Oceans? What's the new Oceans movie?
Is it Oceans?
Oceans 8. Oceans 8. Do you think they're going to do an Oceans 8 version of the Oceans 11? And it's going to be a.
I wouldn't
big
be
one.
Surprised if they do a if they do another if they do you know if they if this has been a success the canyon going up to the Grand Canyon. The only thing I can imagine is that they're going to expand the Oceans. To do a larger
yes,
version of that.
That's what we want. I want an Ocean's 8 with Sandra Bullock.
I assume
on it.
They'll probably call it Ocean's 12.
Well, I didn't like Ocean's 12. It wasn't
no,
very
it
good.
Terrible.
I have, don't think
and
Ocean's
11
8
is
great.
The movie I've seen the most times.
Really?
Not out of choice.
What?
there's a funny ongoing story on a side note that I have with a colleague of mine, because obviously I've done a fair bit of travel for work. I once flew to America and I can't remember which airline it was. I think it was American Airlines, operated by British Airways, and they had TVs, as you do on most long-haul flights, but it was fixed to, like, 9 channels, 6 of which were, like, in Spanish, and then one of them just played Ocean's 11 on loop. So I had to watch Ocean's 11 2.5 times. And it's just been one of those things where, for some reason, it just always seems to crop up, like Ocean's 11. And my mate then went on holiday and stayed in this, like chalet, I think, when he was, like, skiing. And he noticed they had Ocean's 12. And he opened the box and the DVD was for Ocean's 11. And he was like, all I wanted to do was watch Ocean's 12. So Ocean's 11 is the movie that haunts me forever.
I see. This week's podcast could very well have been renamed Pedal Nerds. And I do promise that before This episode ends, we will talk about some guitars. But first of all, Jay Cross, tell us all about Paul Landerners.
Sorry?
Landerners? Landers.
Maybe it's because I'm a Landerner. Paul Landers, you mean? Guitar player of Rammstein.
Paul Landers. At Rammstein's guitarist.
So I'm really excited about this. Tech 21 bringing out another signature pedal from someone that you wouldn't really have expected them to release a signature pedal from. So
not just a pedal.
No, of course. But so this is the new Fly Rig. It's a bit of a stripped back version of a Fly Rig in comparison to what we've seen in the past. It's still got five switches on, but the first bit that you would plug into is the Sans amp, because he is a pretty prolific user of a GT2, which is really cool because that's a really great sounding preamp that generally people kind of dismiss. I've always felt like the Sans amp guitar pedal, sorry, the Tech 21 guitar pedals never really got the appreciation that they deserved. I think
whereas they're a staple of the bass
market. Yeah, completely. I mean, you know, the VT bass and the Sans amp, the standalone Sans amp.
The bass driver.
I mean, you know, there's some fantastic... And they've always made great guitar pedals as well, but that crossover kind of has never really happened. So I'm hoping that this series now... Because, I mean, who else has got one? Richie Kotzen has got one, I think.
Richie Kotzen's
and
got one,
there's,
yeah.
There's someone else, I think, as well. Someone else who you wouldn't have expected. So... really cool. So anyway, you've got the Sans Amp GT2, and then you've got you've got a boost pedal, and then one of their delay effect on there, which is, and also within there they've got a vibrato with tap tempo, which is really, really nice. You've got your tuner built in as well, and yeah, it looks really cool. It's got that nice like sort of flat black that you would expect from a Paul Landers product. Do you remember the Paul Landers Les Paul? Do you not?
That
was, the Paul Landers Les Paul was fantastic. It was a like a flat black Les Paul kind of studio, I guess. But it had these really like dark brushed chrome EMG 81 and 85s, I think, if I remember correctly. And I think there was a push for a boost in there as well. I'm stretching to remember. Matty, can you fill in any details there? Do you remember that?
No.
I'm gonna have to Google it. I remember it being really cool. We had to be really careful with it in the shop because it was like a real flat black that just marked really easily. Here we go. Paul Landers Les Paul. I'll just go on to GAC.co.uk, who presumably still have one in stock. Oh, no, don't.
Yes, I remember this guitar.
Let's have a little look. What are the pickups on here? EMG 60 and 81. So quite a.
That is a wicked look. That was a wicked looking.
Yeah,
Les Paul.
It really was.
I remember that. Not as good as the Sully Erna, which is my favourite rock-styled Les Paul, you know, because it had a built-in flanger. But this was a wicked guitar.
Yeah, it was really cool. So Paul Landers, low-key decent geezer, as far as I'm aware. This is very cool. And Tech 21 just constantly churning out these neat little Fly Rigs.
Yeah, really good pedals. Yeah, sometimes you're right, Jay. I think sometimes overlooked, maybe sort of modern modeling stuff has made people overlook just how good sort of the preamps are, especially that Tech 21 do. But what a sort of a fantastic staple standard of like high quality, well built, great sounding effects. Matt Knight, I did promise before this podcast ends that we would talk about some guitars. Now, we haven't got through everything that was in the news this week, but I am going to just jump right ahead to the only guitar product that has been released in the major news this week. PRS, Matthew Knight.
Yes. Yes, PRS have announced a limited run of SE Standard 24s.
It's such boring news.
Unfortunately,
the only bit of guitar news, and it's like PRS have done another color.
I think the thing is,
guitar.
What we find is, guitar companies, the big guitar companies, have a lot of power and a lot of time to focus energy on a big product launch. So you tend to find that the NAMM shows or key events like that, something happens, where amp companies and pedal companies are a little bit more free and a little bit more fluid to do more stuff. And they also have more product in a year. Generally, if a guitar company releases a new guitar, it's a whole change of line, or, you know, there's a lot gone into it and it totally changes their catalog. So it is rare to get guitar news, but what we do find with things like PRS and the colour change is that they'll do a small run of colours just for one particular territory. So this time it's Europe. And actually what I think is some very cool colours. So it's just your standard SE24, but you've got Baybridge Blue, Cola Metallic, which is kind of a little bit like, it looks a bit like Midnight Wine, but it's a little bit more metallic. Baybridge Blue is a really awesome, like, Royal Blue. Metallic Orange, which I think also looks wicked. Royal Blue Metallic, Satin Black, and White Pearl. So if you're a fan of PRSs, but you've never found the colour that you want, then maybe you'll find it in this. And they're only
nice
going to be...
Nice to have some more traditional sort of flat colours, really.
Yeah, and actually just, you know, not the fancy...
I
you
like
know,
them. They look
top.
Really workhorse. This is what I want from a guitar. It's what always turns me off about PRS.
Well, you know,
is
£475. You could change the pickups in it if you wanted to. They come with a decent trem straight out of the box. They're great setup straight out of the box. For sub £500 rock guitar, if you don't want a Gibson style guitar, an SG or a Les Paul, I think it's a superb option.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think these are great, and I think especially that Baybridge Blue looks fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's my favourite colour out of the whole lot, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, that brings us really right up to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on the Patreon episode, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, and $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name read out in one breath by me. Now, last week, I was quite close to not doing this successfully because I was foolish enough to try and do it running at the
mic. So you're
going to
do it again?
So I'm not... No.
Why not? Why don't... I've got... How about this? How about
fine.
This? No,
okay.
No.
Okay,
maybe like what you should try and do is move away and move back. So start close.
Okay. Yeah.
Move back, but you need to make sure that you maintain...
But that means poor Colin Anderson is not going to...
No, because you come back. And also, it's important that you maintain...
Oh, you want to move in and out.
You maintain a constant level of volume. So as you move away, you need to get louder and then...
Oh, I'm not going to be able to do that. That's very difficult.
I thought you were a professional.
All right, I'm going to start.
Mark Packham used to do all the time, mate. I don't know what you're talking about.
But if I do that, you're not going to know if I've done that because the volume will just stay
well,
the same.
Well, the thing is I was giving you an out there because you could have just stayed where you were and just said, look how good I am, throw my voice.
Oh, now I've told everyone. Okay, fine. All right, I'm going. Are
you
ready?
Where are you off to?
I'm going to read these names and then go.
Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Stephen John Brady, Scott Hamilton, Ivor John Mayer, Marin Peters, Golden G. Richard III, Sean Armour, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wolfman, Cuthbertson, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Daigle, Tucker Ramadan, Ernie Cooper, Emery James, Baker, Crystal Fraps, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Bleed, Derek Pitzer, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Salmon, Blake Wyland, Jake Gray, Chris Valoset, Ron Currier, Scott Kennedy, Robert Rob Nordwick, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Connors, Mantra, Steve, Merkel, Blair, Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, Jenny Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstead, Paul Corrigan, Will Grant, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moon Gravick, Colin Anderson.
It's getting really close.
Oh, can hear it.
I reckon I can only do like two or three more names.
You didn't. Wow. You clearly didn't move away from the mic.
I know. I'm telling you. I'm firing on all cylinders just to get through them.
Why? But
yeah, I think it could be. It could be my current lack of fitness, and the drastic amount of weight I have put on. It could be the six beers I'm drinking per podcast at the moment, but it could be that there are a lot of names there and that no man's lungs are capable of saying so many names in one breath. But there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That is it from us this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang. Goodbye.